Dr. Toby Green is a visiting lecturer in the Department for Political Studies at Bar-Ilan University in Israel. Dr. Green, Toby, hello.
Hi there, how are you?
Very well. Hopeful. Am I right or wrong to be hopeful?
No, I'm also hopeful, and I think in common with most Israelis and Jews in this country, in Britain and around the world, very much hoping that this time we will see progress towards a deal that brings at least some of the hostages home in the near future.
Okay, what do you think has changed, particularly when it comes to Benjamin Netanyahu, for him to get to this point? I mean, Amir, our correspondent, was saying, you know, there has been this threat, this oversight from the president-elect Trump about, you know, making sure a deal is done.
Yes, I think that the incoming Trump administration is a significant difference. Netanyahu, for his part, has been under intense domestic and international pressure to do a deal for a very considerable amount of time. And that pressure remains, I think, internationally. Yes, the fact that Trump is coming into office, it does seem, and certainly that's noises coming from political supporters of Netanyahu in the Israeli media, in a sense they're sort of blaming the deal on the fact that Netanyahu is under considerable pressure from the incoming Trump administration. So that does seem to be a factor. But of course, there's also a change on the Hamas side. Hamas finds itself isolated. Its allies have been rocked back in the region. The defeat of Hezbollah, the collapse of the Assad regime, setbacks for Iran, the destruction of its leadership in the Gaza Strip. And so Hamas has also, its calculations are also shifting.
There is still, though, political pressure within Netanyahu's parliament and a resistance to be seen as surrendering to Hamas.
Yes, so as your correspondent was describing, there are opponents to this agreement within the Israeli coalition. That's one of the reasons why we can get a sense that this is very serious advances towards an agreement. The level of noise we're hearing from opponents to a deal among far-right parties within Netanyahu's coalition. But they can raise the political costs for Netanyahu of doing a deal, but they don't have the power to block a deal. Netanyahu, even without their support, would still have a majority in his cabinet to pass a deal, and that's where the crucial decision-making would happen. And even if those two parties were to leave the government, they would not immediately bring down the government. So, and there would be a majority in the Knesset, were it to come to it, for a deal. So they can raise the political costs for Netanyahu, but they can't block a deal. So ultimately, it's Netanyahu's decision.
Let me bring in Tahani Mustafa, who's a senior Palestine analyst at the International Crisis Group think tank. Tahani Mustafa, hello. Morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for talking to me. You're joining us from Jordan. I'm going to start with the same question I had to Toby. I'm hopeful. In your opinion, am I right to be hopeful?
Well, I definitely exercise some caution. We've seen in the past where, you know, numerous times we've heard announcements saying that we're very close to deal, and then something as close as 15 minutes can be enough to sort of derail that entire process. So I think until something is actually signed by both sides, it is definitely worth exercising some cautious optimism.
I wonder, just, you know, when you think of, like, we're 15 months on since October the 7th, when it comes to negotiations, how much has just sheer fatigue in terms of on both sides brought us to this point?
Well, I think it's less, maybe less fatigue, but more pressures, I think, from both sides. You know, as you've rightly detailed, Israel is, you know, there are still some elements within the Israeli establishment that are still going full-on maximalist with their objectives. There's still a lot of divisions on those sides. On Hamas's end, you know, yes, we've seen that the axis of resistance has proven itself to be largely a paper tiger, but at the same time, Hamas has shown that it has the capability to maintain a long-term insurgency, which is what we're seeing in the north. But the pressure now is the fact that the scale of humanitarian suffering is so immense that that is really starting to put pressure on Hamas politically, internally, within the Palestinian political space. But I think in terms of just operationally speaking, both sides, I mean, it's very clear that both sides have the capacity and are still willing to keep going if they can. But it's more the outside pressure that is really starting to push, at least from the Israeli side, and then also on Hamas's side in terms of its regional isolation and now also its the domestic pressures.
I think it's clear who's pressurising Israel. Who's pressurising Hamas?
Well, there's definitely pressure from its regional mediators, Egypt. Egypt has an interest of seeing an immediate ceasefire, especially before Trump comes in. Same with other regional mediators, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. These countries are trying to effectively position themselves vis-a-vis Trump. There's also internally, domestically, Hamas's popularity is on the increasing decline in both Gaza and the West Bank, and the scale, the sheer scale of humanitarian suffering is something that Hamas can no longer put to aside and continue the way that it is.
And it's been very clear, and the rallying against Israel's tactics when it comes to Gaza, but in terms of Hamas's what's been laid at the foot of Hamas in terms of blame, how much pressure or what is the kind of sentiment towards Hamas at the moment amongst Gazans?
Well, look, it's very difficult to gauge right now because we are still in the throes of war. Communication is very difficult in terms of conducting consistent opinion polls. So I would really take that with a lot of caution, honestly. But I mean, it's very clear. I mean, if you just look at the sheer scale of humanitarian suffering, the discussions that are coming out of Palestinians' faces, where it feels like Hamas has sort of brought Palestinians to the brink of an existential crisis, effectively, right? So there definitely is pressure that Hamas is feeling internally, and you're also seeing that in the context of the West Bank now, with Hamas's pursuit of armed resistance, which again is proving to be incredibly futile. So there definitely has been, there definitely is a lot of discontent, but in terms of being able to really put a tangible measurement on that is very difficult, again, given the circumstances in Gaza right now. In terms of its recruitment, at the same time, in terms of its recruitment, Hamas has actually seen an 85% increase in recruitment to its military wing since the start of this onslaught. But again, that has nothing to do with dogma and everything to do with circumstance here.
I ask this because if a deal, and I'll use the word if a deal comes through, what does Gaza look like, days after the deal is agreed? Who's in charge? Who's managing Gaza? In your opinion, I'll ask the same question to Toby in a second, or get his comments as well. What does it look like? What role does Hamas play?
Well, look, there are still a lot of things that are very unclear about this deal. Just, even if you were to look at the specifics like geographical markers, Israel hasn't really committed to anything in terms of a withdrawal, military drawdown, or even ending its campaign in Gaza. And what's worse is that in terms of the details of a day after, those are still very unclear. And you do have different, you've got millions of ideas floating around, millions of plans floating around. The Americans have their own plan for a day after, which involves reinstating the PA into Gaza. Hamas and the Palestinians already have a similar sort of conception of the day after, where they also want to see either the PA or some sort of administrative body reinstated into Gaza. Israel, on the other hand, again, and this is not something that the establishment is completely unified on, but they themselves are unclear about who they want to run Gaza. Is it going to be run by private security companies and aid organizations? Something that aid organizations themselves are admitting is a very real possibility. And this idea of reconstruction being a complete fantasy, that's something that many within, especially the international policymaking circles, are very clear is very unlikely, at least in any sort of short term. We're talking about in the next 3 to 4 or 5 years, but simply because Israel won't allow it, right? That's not even a factor in Israel's calculation for any sort of day after scenario for Gaza. Again, Israel has also floated ideas about creating these sort of tribal or clan-type administrative clusters in different parts of Gaza, where parts of that will be administered by prominent families and tribal clans, something that these Gazan families and clans have blatantly told the Israelis that they simply don't have the capacity to conduct modern-day governance functions, right? So it's still very unclear. I mean, these are all the kind of contours that could very much really derail any sort of serious permanent cessation of hostilities, at least if we're talking about this phased deal now. In terms of phase two, that is definitely something that can be completely derailed.
What's your vision, Toby, of the days after, if a deal is agreed?
Yeah, well, in essence, I agree with Tahani. There isn't a serious plan for a future governance of the Gaza Strip led by Palestinians, which doesn't involve some role for the Palestinian Authority, albeit, of course, we know the PA is very weak, very corrupt, has lost credibility with Palestinians as well as with Israelis, and so it needs a huge amount of of international support. It may be that it's somewhat an arm's length role for the PA to begin with, whilst other Palestinians and international actors take the lead. That's understood, I think, not only internationally, but among many, many people in Israel, including much of the centre ground, the Israeli security establishment, much of the Israeli political opposition understand that there has to be a role for the Palestinian Authority. And that's been a big issue of dispute between Netanyahu, parts of the security establishment, and indeed one of the big disagreements between Israel and the recently fired Defence Minister Yoav Gallant was Netanyahu's refusal to articulate a meaningful and serious plan for a day after in the Gaza Strip. And of course, Netanyahu has been constrained on articulating that plan and speaking about a role for the PA because of his dependence on far right elements in his coalition. But many, many Israelis, including much of the serious thinking in Israel's sort of centre ground mainstream security establishment and political opposition, understands there has to be a role for a PA in the future reconstruction of the Gaza Strip.
I know your university put together like a 5-option plan for the future of Gaza. This was early in the conflict. How has that changed?
Yeah, so myself and Professor Jonathan Reinhold wrote a paper for the Begin Sadat Centre setting out these options. And the truth is, and we published that paper a couple of weeks into the war in October 2023, and nothing has significantly changed. The options remain very limited, and that is why I continue to argue that ultimately we need a future governance of the Gaza Strip, which involves the PA, backed by a wide array of international supporters. And the alternatives are, continued Hamas rule, which is completely unacceptable, the long-term Israeli occupation, which is very bad for Israel. All the alternatives are worse, even than that challenging prospect of a reconstituted PA.
So we sit and wait in hope. Let's see what happens. Dr. Toby Green, visiting lecturer in the Department for Political Studies at Bar-Ilan University in Israel, thank you. Tahani Mustafa, senior Palestine analyst at the International Crisis Group think tank, thank you for joining us as well from Jordan.